Thank you. Kind of a quick funny story. I was slated to preach on January 5th of this year, and I got sick like 3 days before, and I was really sick. It was when the flu and all that was going around and went through our entire house, and I was super sick, but the forecast was also showing that we were going to get a bunch of snow Saturday night into Sunday morning, so I was like dilemma zone. Do I not prepare a sermon and bank on church canceling for the second time in its history? Do I risk it? Or do I, while sick, put together a sermon and see what happens? Well, obviously, I put together the sermon. I was not that brave, all right? But then church got canceled, and so I never actually got to give that sermon. So it actually worked out this well this week for me to revisit this sermon. And my intention, my heart behind the sermon that I was going to give on the 5th was that it was a new year, and what an excellent time to be reminded of the gospel. So central to our faith. Something that I know immediately when we say gospel, we're like, oh gosh, all right, heard this one before. How many million sermons on the gospel have I heard? And I get it. And yet, my illustration this morning is that this is the bones. So important, the bones of the gospel, the bones of our existence as a church, collectively and individually. This is the bones. This gives the structure to our bodies. It holds up everything else. Everything else is connected to it one way or another. It gives us a backbone. We stand up for certain things. It doesn't mean we're just amphibious or we're just constantly always gray and nuanced and everything is wishy-washy, but no, we actually have certain things that we stand and we are strong on and we are firm on. And this gives us structure, this gives us identity. We stand up, this makes us humans. Other animals probably do the same, but that's part of what differentiates us from a lot of animals, is that we are on 2 feet standing up. The bones of the gospel. Now, in talking about the gospel, always a good idea to start at the beginning. There's a famous quote that says, whenever you're trying to interpret a passage or a verse in the Bible, start at the beginning. So we're going to start at the beginning. And I'm going to give this flyover, all right? Flyover of the entire Bible to the gospel, and then the gospel to the future. I hope I can give us some structure. Some structure. Things we build our life on. Things that we can maybe say, why do I do what I do? Because it's connected to this gospel message, the bones of my existence, the bones. We as a church, why do we do this? Why do we do that? Why do we do this? Because this is the bones. This is our existence. This is so important. I'm excited to do that this morning. So if you have your Bibles and you want to flip through pages really fast, I'll be referencing a lot of passages, but I won't actually be flying in to actually look at them. But if you know, you'll be familiar with where I'm going. Well, let's get this gospel message and the message of the Bible really clear in our minds so that we can go forward with a strong, healthy body, not only collectively as a church, but individually, because we know the bones got to be good. And if the bones are good, the rest don't matter. Y'all know. All right, you guys are on it. There we go. Amen. All right, in the beginning, Genesis 1, God creates a good earth. Good, 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 good. 6 days, good. Good, good, good. 7th day, he's like, now I'm going to rest and I'm going to rule and I'm going to reign. At the heart of the 6th day, or the climax of the 6th day, he creates human beings. Image bearers is what he calls them. This tremendous position. Oh my gosh, a glorious position. You are going to be my image bearers. You're going to reflect my character on earth. Think of an ambassador, all right? Or think of a diplomat of some kind that goes to other foreign countries, but with them is all the authority and the weight of the government that they are representing. So think of that. That's you. That is all of us. Once Felicity is in on that, the day she was born, she was given that. How beautiful, how wonderful of a commission to be my image bearer and to reflect my character and myself into the world. And this is what God has given to human beings. And he says, be fruitful and multiply and subdue the earth. Rule. Who rules the world? Thank you. I knew it. I was like, somebody else is going to get it. Okay, men and girls, men and women, all right? Yes, human beings, all right? Animals aren't ruling the earth. Animals aren't the ones that are cultivating and doing all these things. Human beings. And again, this is where we see this. Human beings are the ones that are subduing the earth. They are stewards of this good earth. That was the commission given in Genesis 1 and 2 to human beings. We all know Genesis 3. How did the first ones do with it? Adam and Eve? Not so good. Did a poor job. They were given one command. Don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. For on that day you will surely die. And what did they do? The temptation was too great. Don't put your hand on that hot stove. Oh, but I want to. I really want to. And they ate. And they were exiled from God's presence. So important, this idea of exile. We come again. If you know the Old Testament, you know another exile. The punishment, the really kind of, not poetic, but it's just like a perfect kind of punishment fits the crime in a sense, is that when we disobey God, we're exiled from God's presence. Remember, the tree of life was also in God's presence. And when you are separated from the tree of life, from God's presence, there is only death. It didn't mean that they died immediately, but the Old Testament, really the New Testament, has very interesting ideas about death and living and life and death. It's fascinating. It's one of the most fascinating subjects to me in the Bible. And so they very much, I always say, they believed in zombies way before we ever believed in zombies, because they could see that somebody could be living, breathing, and yet dead. Dead because they are separated from God. Dead because they are not in the presence of God. They're dead. They're dead. And this is sad. Whatever hell is, and I'm talking about hell, hell at its very nature is exile from God. And so it is death. So important. Such an important theme in the Old Testament, and as we are pushing forward towards the gospel and what Jesus did, to keep in mind this. Well, what happens? Adam and Eve are exiled from the garden. Sin grows, wickedness expands, God's good creation, as Romans 8, Paul talks about, is subjected to futility, frustration, contamination. And what was so beautiful and good in Genesis 1 and 2 is now becoming painful and awful and a burden and terrible. What is God going to do? What is he going to do? Is he going to wipe the slate clean? Kind of does. Right? Not totally clean. Saves Noah and his family, all right? But he's got to do something. He wants to do something. How do I save creation? How do I get it back to the goodness? Do I just leave it? Or do I go fly to some other planet in some other galaxy? I've been watching a lot of deep space YouTube videos lately. I'm just fascinated by it. It's amazing. Golly, it's so big. It's wonderful. But yeah, is he like, dude, forget this. I'm going to go to another planet. We're going to start over on another planet and see what happens there. No, he's committed. No, I'm committed. And he chooses a man, Abraham. Genesis chapter 12, a monster passage in the Old Testament. So, so important. And what God does is he said, you know what? I'm going to make a promise to this man. Always encouraging to me. I haven't thought super deeply on this, so if you think more deeply on this subject and you want to say, hey, come back on this subject, that's great, come and talk to me. But I like the idea of structuring my life on promises to people and to beings. I live my life because I made a promise to this person to live in such a way. I may live my life because I made a promise to God to live in such and such a way. I made a promise. I love that. I really like that because I see God structuring how he interacts with humanity, human beings, and this earth because of promises he makes. And he makes a promise to Abraham. He says, your offspring will be great. They're going to be a great nation. I'm going to give them land. I'm going to bless them. Anybody who curses them, I will curse. Anybody who blesses them, I will bless. Oh, man. Guess what? Through your offspring, you will be a blessing to all the nations. Right there. Did you catch it? That is the plan. That is God's plan. Creation, man, it is just corrupt. It's getting messy. What am I going to do? I'm going to choose a man, and his offspring. And I'm going to work through their offspring. I'm going to dwell with them. And I'm going to teach them. And by that, by dwelling with them, by teaching them, by them following me, they are going to be a blessing. They are going to be a blessing in the whole entire earth. And by the whole earth, the earth will be renewed and restored. This is God's plan. It's wonderful. I think that was kind of maybe your first point. To some degree, God has chosen Abraham's offspring to be the means by which God restores creation. Let's try the simplest way I could put it. That's kind of the first point. This is Genesis chapter 12, 1 through 3, 1 through 4. Powerful, big, big chapter in the Old Testament. Highly recommend going and revisiting it. All right, so what happens next? God chooses Abraham. Tons of fascinating stories. Right, Genesis 13 and on through 50. Super interesting. Abraham's offspring grows, it expands. They get into Egypt through Joseph, but then they're enslaved. And we have a long kind of stretch of time, hundreds of years, where they grow, where they expand, but they are slaves in Egypt. Well, how is God's plan going to go forward if you're slaves in Egypt? God said again, hey, I promised you land. I made all these promises. They haven't failed, and I haven't forgotten. Now, I'm going to set you free from the greatest world power in your day and age, Egypt. Man. Now, again, so important. God isn't just setting them free because he's like, oh, man, this is just wrong and messed up. No, he said, I made promises to you. You're going to be my people. I'm going to give you land. I'm going to dwell with you. You're going to be the means through which I bring blessing to the whole earth. So that's why I'm setting you free. From Egypt, I'm fulfilling my intended purpose. I'm staying committed to the promises I made to your ancestor Abraham. So he sets them free. And we get through, as you kind of go along in the story, especially the Joshua, we come to some very, what feels very difficult passages. Where you have Israel, people of God, and God saying, you know what, I promise you this land, and I want you to go in there. I want you to kill the inhabitants. It's tough. Everything I read on that, it should feel, ugh. We know that. We know God commanded it. But it feels, oh, it just feels wrong. I don't want to totally eradicate that. I think it always kind of should feel, oh, this is hard. But again, the Bible is very clear. What was God doing? If we're trying to bring blessing to the whole earth, and you have a lot of wickedness, very specific times. And I would say, as most scholars and theologians would say, those are probably off the table nowadays. Off the table. But in the past, it was on the table for God to say, we need to take care of this in a violent fashion. Interesting, food for thought, this is very reminiscent of the flood. One is a natural disaster, and one is people killing people. But yet the same thing going on with God. There is wickedness. It is awful. It is contaminating. It is destroying. And if we are trying to get the creation back on track to restore creation, then this wickedness has to be taken care of. It's tough. I know. But that is some of the reason and the impetus behind what is going on. The passages are very clear. The sin of the Amorites has not fully been come to its full weight, full authority, right? That's in Genesis, so they're waiting for that. And therefore, God is going to take care of it. And so the Israelites taking the promised land is God's judgment on the wickedness of the Canaanites. I know it's tough. I know it's hard. It should be hard. It should feel, That is the biblical story and what is being communicated to us. Let's continue on in our story. I just wanted to pause on that because a lot of people have questions about that. And we should have questions. We should ask hard questions like that. We should continue to seek for answers as best we can. And sometimes we get clear answers and sometimes we get, well, it's an answer. But this is the best we can do right now. Through the story of Israel, again, coming out of Egypt, wandering in the desert, conquering the promised land, living in the promised land, a huge theme arises. Israel is just as much a part of the problem as everybody else is.